ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जया मुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवते उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिके। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 17 टेक्स्ट 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We'll just read through the translations. Text 5. On top of Mount Meru, the Ganges divides into four branches, each of which gushes into different directions, east, west, north, and south. These branches, known by the names Sita, Alakananda, Chakshu, and Bhadra, flow down to the ocean. Text 6. The branch of the Ganges, known as Sita, flows through Brahmapuri atop Mount Meru, and from there it runs down to the nearby peaks of Kesharachala Mountains, which stand almost as high as Mount Meru itself. These mountains are like a bunch of filaments around Mount Meru. From the Kesharachala Mountains, the Ganges falls to the peaks of Gandhamadana Mountain and then flows into the land of Bhadrashwavarsha. Finally, it reaches the ocean of salt water in the west. Text 7. The branch of the Ganges, known as Chakshu, falls onto the summit of Malyavan Mountain, and from there cascades onto the land of Ketumalavarsha. The Ganges flows incessantly through Ketumalavarsha and in this way also reaches the ocean of salt water in west. Text 8. The branch of the Ganges known as Bhadra flows from the northern side of Mount Meru. Its waters fall onto the peaks of Kumuda Mountain, Mount Nila, Shweta Mountain, and Shringavan Mountain in succession. Then it runs down into the province of Kuru, and after flowing through that land, flows into the saltwater ocean in the north. Text 9. Similarly, the branch of the Ganges, also known as Alakananda, flows from the southern side of Brahmapuri, Brahma Sadhana, passing over the tops of mountains in various lands. It falls down with fierce force upon the peaks of the mountains Hemakuta and Himakuta. After inundating the tops of these mountains, the Ganges falls down onto the tract of land known as Bharatavarsha, which she also inundates. Then the Ganges flows into the ocean of salt water in the south. Persons who come to bathe in this river are fortunate. It is not very difficult for them to achieve with every step the results of performing great sacrifices like Rajasuya and Ashwamedha Yajnas. Purport. The place where the Ganges flows into the salt water of the Bay of Bengal is still known as Ganga Sagara, or the meeting place of the Ganges and the Bay of Bengal. On Makar Sankranti, in the month of January, February, thousands of people still go there to bathe, hoping to be liberated. That they can actually be liberated in this way is confirmed herein. For those who bathe in Ganges at any time, the result of great sacrifices like the Ashwamedha and Rajasuya Yajnas are not at all difficult to achieve. Most people in India are still inclined to bathe in the Ganges, and there are many places where they can do so. At Prayag, Allahabad, many thousands of people gather during the month of January to bathe in the confluence of the Ganges and Yamuna. Afterward, many of them go to the confluence of the Bay of Bengal and Ganges to take bath there. Thus, it is special facility for all the people of India that they can bathe in the waters of Ganga at so many places of pilgrimage. Hare Krishna. Request all the devotees present here to please shower their blessings and mercy so that I can speak. It was, how to say, when I came to know, it was a bit nervous. So requesting all your blessings. I would start to with the glorification of Mother Ganga from different scriptures and how Krishna says that he's non-different from Mother Ganga. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, shloka 31, Krishna says, "Of all purifiers, I am Vind. Of the wielders of weapons, I am Rama. Of fish, I am the shark. And of flowing rivers, I am Ganga." From Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, it's mentioned that liberation can be attained. That liberation attained by Brahman realization at any other holy place is obtained simply by bathing in Ganga at Navadvip. I was having a discussion with one Mayavadi in a plane ride to, I think, Pune or Bombay. And, you know, having a big discussion, and you know, he was describing how the whole purpose of human form of life is to go and merge into Brahman and, you know, destroy the whole bodily features. And he starts quoting from different Vedas and Puranas and Shastras about how important it is to just merge oneself in Brahman. And then, you know, there was a quite long discussion about how it's not about merging into Brahman, but it is about serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At one point, the discussion came up, and he mentioned that the whole thing is that the Supreme Brahman, he gets influenced or overpowered by Maya, and then he comes down to this world and he takes a human form of life, and he becomes the what we see as the living entities, you know, here. At this point, I was actually praying to Narsimhadev, because he was quoting from Shastras I have never even heard about. And, you know, it was just going on and on. I was praying to Narsimhadev, "My Lord, I don't want to get defeated. It can be anything. I may not be able to convince this person to become Krishna conscious, but I just don't want to get defeated." And somehow or other, the Lord arranged that he speaks this statement that the Brahman gets overpowered by Maya. The Supreme Brahman gets overpowered by Maya. And I said, "So you consider Brahman to be supreme?" And he said, "Yes. You know, he's the ultimate. He's, you know, nowhere. Nobody's above him. Nobody's equal to him." I said, "Then how is it that he gets overpowered by his own energy and he falls in Maya and you know, he becomes living entities here?" And he said, "You swam across the ocean." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "I have no answer to this point." I said, "So why don't you swim across with me?" And he said, No, "I don't want to swim across." "Why?" He says, "Because I'm like a dog's tail. It always remains curved. And even if you put it into a pipe for 12 years, when you take it out, it's going to remain curved." I said, you don't want to give up this Mayavada philosophy from your heart. He says, I agree to what you say. I believe what you say, but I'm just too attached. So I said, then how can you merge into Brahman at the end of this life? How can you become Brahman? He said, just by the performance of rituals. I will follow Varnashram properly and then I will become Brahman. I said, so are you following your Varnashram properly? He said, yes, yes, you know, very nicely. I said, so what's your caste? What's your Varna? Oh, I'm a South Indian Iyengar Brahmin. Okay, and so what do you do? What's your job? He says, oh, I'm working in a company as a CEO of some company. I said, if you're a Brahmana, how can you be working for a company? You're supposed to be learning, teaching, practicing, preaching. And he said, no, you know, that's also there, but I need to maintain my family. I have one wife, two children. I need to maintain them. So, but you can do the same thing by performing the duties of your Varna. He says, no, but you don't get enough money out of there. I said, but what, you know, okay, so you are not following the Varnashram because you are supposed to, or, you know, the way how it is supposed to be done. You are doing, you know, you are just saying it and you're not doing anything. So what is it that drives you? He says, oh, the merging into Brahman. He says, but what is that? What does it feel like to be merged into Brahman? He says, it means that you lost all, you have nothing in this material world. You gain happiness in Brahman. You become God. I said, but how does it, what is it that you become God? He says, no, you become the Supreme, you become God, and that what it is. That's what it is. You just become God. And then I can rule everything and I can do everything. So that was his idea of what is the happiness derived from Brahman, from merging into Brahman, that you can do anything you want. Then I mentioned, but you have no form, you have no senses, you have no qualities. So how is it that you're going to be happy over there? And he goes, I said, no, don't just say, say something. He says, I need to think about it. And he starts to think about it. And I think he was thinking for more than an hour, and the plane landed. And I said, so did you think about something? He said, yes, I thought about it. I agree what you say. I'm starting to doubt my own philosophy, which I've been studying for past 50 years. It doesn't make any sense. Where do you come from? Oh, you know, we are from ISKCON. Oh, what is the source of your knowledge? I said, it's Srila Prabhupada's books. I said, do you have any? I said, yes. And I had one Bhagavad Gita, like really old, that my father gave me when I was a student, you know. He said, can I have that Gita? I said, yeah, sure. He said, how, you know, and then he started to read the Gita. And I think it was months and months later, he called me. He's saying that, you know, he joined some temple in South India and he became a full-time devotee. Yeah, so, you know, so when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he mentions in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya that the liberation attained by just Brahman realization at any other holy place is obtained simply by bathing in Ganga at Navadvip, he doesn't talk about this kind of liberation of just becoming, merging into the light, becoming God and ruling. What it mentions is about the Paramatma, the Bhagavan feature of the Lord, in which you have devotion to the Lord, you have love for the Lord, You have interaction with the Lord. You are with the Lord. So that kind of benefit is derived just by taking bath in Ganga. Here Srila Prabhupada in the paper also makes a very nice point. It says, for those who bathe in Ganga at any time. I was contemplating on this point of what it means by for those who bathe in Ganga. And I had a few doubts come across, some, how to say, you know, I was just going through my head. And one thing clicked me was, does it, when we are in Ganga taking bath, are we actually taking bath in Ganga? Or we are, how to say, replacing the waters of Ganga with having fun in some resort, in some water park, and it happens to be Ganga Devi. When you go to Ganga, many times you see, I think there was also some complaints brought up about that people are just not respecting Ganga Devi. You know, they're just playing around, doing nonsense. They go to on the banks of Ganga, do illicit activities. So what it means to actually take bath in Ganga? What I came across was, to take bath in Ganga means to be there chanting the holy names of the Lord, meditating on the Lord, meditating on Ganga Devi, praying to Ganga Devi to give us the Krishna praying. Many years ago, on one of the Gaur Purnima festivals, I think Jai Pataka Maharaj, he was giving class, and he mentioned that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has stored Krishna prema for all the living entities here in Ganga. Anybody with full faith, full devotion, if they go and take bath in Ganga, they will get Krishna prema. So that's the level of devotion is just stored for us in Ganga. The only thing we have to do is to go and take bath in Ganga. Last year, I don't know, maybe Pankajangi Prabhu can mention, there is some month in which, you know, Jarani Asprabhu and Pankajangi Prabhu were both used to go every day. Prabhu, which month is that to take bath in Ganga? Vaishak. And I think Jananivas Prabhu, he mentioned that the results of studying of all the scriptures, to visiting all the holy places, and to gain devotion from Krishna is arrived just by taking bath in Ganga in the month of Vaishak. Right, Prabhu? It's just, and more. So it's just, you know, there is so many glories of Ganga Devi, but when we go to take bath in Ganga, including myself, it's just thinking of Ganga, oh, it's too hot, let's cool ourselves down in Ganga, let's have some fun in Ganga, play around. But actually reading, you know, when I was preparing myself for giving this class, it's actually so deep. When we go to take bath in Ganga, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya Kanda, it mentions, after having performed his prescribed duties for many millions of lifetimes, leading a pious life of non-violence and humility, and praying constantly and sincerely to the Supreme Lord, a person is awarded the opportunity at the time of death. Ganga water to him and chanting of Lord Narayan's holy name. This will certainly award him liberation from all material bondage. Only then can he be blessed to become a servant of Lord Krishna. So I don't know how many millions and millions of lifetimes pious benefits we have accumulated to be actually in this place of Sridham Mayapur, you know, which is on the banks of Ganga. In Sridham Mayapur, many times you just walk down any area you will always hear some kirtan happening some part of Mayapur. You know, there is, you know, either the kirtan party in the evening, or some devotee has some aarti going on in their place, or there is some devotee has invited some devotees for lecture and kirtans in their place. So what we have is the best of all opportunities is Ganga Devi right here, and the holy names of the Lord constantly happening basically 24 hours a day in Mayapur Dham. One of the best examples for this was Padmalochan Prabhu. He would take bath in Ganga every day. Didn't matter what season it was, what time it was. At least once a day, he would go and take bath in Ganga. I think he would be the best person to speak on the glories of Mother Ganga. I think it was his desire as well when he leaves his body that they should give him Jala Samadhi. Should just put his body in Ganga and just... And I think they did that. They had them... had his body in Ganga for some time, and then they took out and, you know, cremated because of the government rules of not allowing the bodies to be put in Ganga or any rivers anymore. So Padmalochan Prabhu, he would do this every day, take bath in Ganga, chant, I don't know, it was certainly more than 16 rounds a day, maybe 64 rounds, I'm not sure. And he had a wonderful departure from this material world. And I think this is what all of us are striving for, is that at the end of our life we are able to go home back to Godhead in a very wonderful way. My father, he would always say, he would always mention, says, this life, how we live, is like an examination. You know, you live your life like an examination, and the moment of death is the result. And he would explain it to me because that time I was a school, you know, I was a student in the school, so that's how he would explain. He said, your whole life is like an examination period. You're working hard, you know, you want to achieve, you don't want to fail, you know, you're struggling, you're working really hard. So that's how your whole life is supposed to be like. You're working hard to attain Krishna Prema. Whole lifetime. And at the time of death, the way how you leave your body is, you know, that what it determines that, you know, if you pass in your examination or you failed. And, you know, in our house, the atmosphere was always maintained like a temple. You know, there was always, I remember my father, he would spend 4 to 5 hours a day just performing deity worship. And he would always engage me in deity worship. When I was 3, he gave me a set of Radha Krishna deities, you know, to worship. And then, you know, we would have competition every holidays because we had a deities of Laddu Gopal coming from, you know, my great grandmother. And then we had two deities of Laddu Gopal. So my father used to worship them as Krishna Balaram, and we had this Radha Krishna deities after my father joined ISKCON. And we used to have competitions every holiday, who can dress the deities better. And, you know, sometimes he would win, sometimes I would win. And you just, I don't, you know, we used to do all sorts of crazy things with the Lord, you know, like how we have in Chandan Yatra festival, you know, different veshas. So every Saturday, Sunday, every holiday, summer vacations, winter vacations, we would sit down 4 or 5 hours a day and just dress deities in different outfits and compare who has done a better job. And, you know, after that, you know, so there would be, you know, lectures and, you know, chanting of japa is always going to be. And we would attain the evening arati, the Sandhya arati in the temple. And every time I would sit down for doing my homeworks or anything like that, my father would come and he would just drop a point. He would say, this is all avidya. This is all ignorance here. And he would always preach me, you know, that should study Sri Prabhupada's books. And I think it was because of his constant guidance. At one time I started to do is I would turn on a lecture, you know, on a MP3 lecture. I would just listen to a lecture and I would sit down to do the homework. And at the end of my homework session, I had no idea what I wrote down in my notebook, but I have memorized the whole lecture. And my mother would always complain, you know, you're not studying, you're not studying. And at one time I told my mom, I don't want to study anymore, you know, this is all avidya. And that created a fight in the house. You know, my mother started to fight with my father. You are always spoiling my son, you know, saying that this is all avidya and this and that. He's not studying properly. And my examinations would come. I would work very hard because throughout the year you don't study, right? You know, it's all meant for enjoying, you know, you playing or deity worship or just, you know, hanging out, doing something. And during examination time, you work hard. Somehow or other, you manage, you know, you copy from different friends, you cheat in the examination, and somehow or other, you manage to pass. So the mother is peaceful, that at least my son is passing. She's not, you know, worrying much. By the Lord's mercy, I didn't just fail a year in my school, but I just barely made it through, you know, somehow or other. I just made it through. And then I came to Mayapur and was doing Bhakti Shastri, and when the results came out, I think I got like 85 or 87%. And I called up my mother and said, Ma, I got 87%. And she said, send your papers back for recorrection. Cannot be yours. Yeah, he goes, it cannot be yours. I said, no, seriously, it's mine. He says, cannot be. You never got this much. I said, well, back then I didn't want it to study. This is what I actually wanted to study. And she was so happy, you know, when she came here. And then I was supposed to go back, but I showed my certificate to my spiritual master, and he said, why you want to go back? You know, if you go back to Bombay, you will fall back in Maya. You better just stay in Mayapur and study in Gurukul. I said, Maharaj, I would be the happiest person if that actually happens. And he said, okay, I will talk to your father. And he spoke to my father, and my father agreed. And, you know, I was put back in Gurukul. And since then, you know, every time when I had examinations, I always scored good marks. And my mother, she was so happy. And I was so happy. And then since then, she didn't complain. I guess the reason was, this is what I wanted to do, and I got the blessings of my spiritual master. I got the blessings of the Vaishnavas residing here. And I remember when I was not in Gurukul, every day we would go to Ganga, and I would pray to Ganga Devi. And I was studying in one Madhva Gurukul in Bombay for 4 months after I finished my high school. I would pray every day to Ganga Devi. Ganga Devi, I don't want to go back to Bombay, but I have to. I don't want to study in that Madhva Gurukul, but I have to. I have to because I don't want to study in any other college. And there is no another form that I can progress myself, you know, out of the karmic education. Please help me somewhere, somehow. And I would pray like that every day to Ganga Devi. I would go to Samadhi Mandir. I would pray to Srila Prabhupada. And like, please, Srila Prabhupada, please help me. I don't want to go back to Bombay. Then I would come to Radha Madhava temple. I would pray to Radha Madhava. Please, Radha Madhava, I don't want to go back to Bombay. Please make some arrangement. And then a week later, my spiritual master came and he said, you should not go back to Bombay. You should stay in Mayapur and study. So I guess it was by the blessings of Ganga Devi, Srila Prabhupada, Sri Sri Radha Madhava, the Vaishnavas, that I was able to stay in Sridhar Mayapur and progress. I recently had a discussion recently I was with my parents, and I had a discussion with my father. I said, what would I be if I would not have been in Mayapur Gurukul? What would I be? And my father, he was thinking, and he said, just a few days ago, he was contemplating on the same topic. What would I be if I would not have joined Mayapur Gurukul? And he said, probably you would be one of the face in the crowd, you know, working 12 hours a day, you know, like a donkey, and be Mr. Nobody, you know, having a job somewhere and suffering. Regularly, I have discussions with my friends from my school time, And many times I ask them, so how are you doing? And they say, well, same old regular things in which, you know, you wake up at around 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, quickly eat, catch a train at 9:30, you know, get crushed among all these people going for a job. Before you even enter your job area, you're sweating, you know, like dirty, disgusting. And you work over there for 8 hours, come back in the same 2-hour local train, same way, you know, crowded like animals. Then you come back home at around 10, 10:30, eat something, and turn the TV on, watch something, or you go out with some friends and, you know, sit on the side of the road, make comments on people going by, and then you go to sleep at around 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And then they would ask me, what do you do? Well, just recently we finished, you know, the Narasimha Chaturdashi festival, and you know, we had a glorious festival. Now we are preparing for, you know, soon, you know, within a week we are going to prepare for Snani Yatra. When the Snani Yatra finishes, we will be preparing for Janma, you know, Rath Yatra. When Rath Yatra finishes, we will be preparing for Janmashtami, then Radha Ashtami. Then we have, you know, the school starts, and we will be studying and hold on, full on education for 6 months. And in the midway, we'll have Kartik 1 month festival, Govardhan Puja, Gopashtami, this, that. Then we'll have, you know, again, Gaur Purnima festival. And so in our life, we every day we have a new festival. One day I had a discussion with Jananivas Prabhu, and he was mentioning, he calculated throughout the whole year. And he said, you know, he was calculating all the festivals which goes on for, you know, 1 month, like Salila Vihar, Kartik, Gaur Purnima, then all these small different festivals. And he made an average of it, and it comes out that every third day we have a festival. So that's our life in Sridhar Mayapur, you know, that every third day we have a festival. And yeah, Prashad. And there was recently, there was a group from Maharashtra, they came to see Gurukul. You know, I was taking them around, and I showed them our kitchen. And they said, so how many times you eat? Oh, just twice. Oh, twice. Well, yeah, it means in the morning, you know, around 6:30, we get some snacks, some dry fruits, you know, like handful. And in the evening, small boys, they get some salties. But our main meals are just twice a day. Oh my God, that's tough, must be tough. Like, no. And for breakfast, we have half a liter of milk, you know, seasonal fruits. And for lunch, we have like three kinds of different sabjis, rice, dal, you know, chutneys, some salad, some sweets, some drink. So our 8 to 9 preparation, all cooked in ghee. All cooked in ghee. Yeah, yeah, you know, just, that's our everyday meal. That's your everyday meal. That's like a feast. I said, well, that's the glory of Krishna consciousness. You know, that every day you can have a feast. And then when you actually, you decide to have a feast, is something more than that. You know, something more different. So that's the glory of, you know, being Krishna conscious. You know, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he says, whatever my devotee doesn't have, I give him, and what he has, I preserve it for future. So this is what it means. You know, what we don't have is given. We had one lady coming from Hungary and came to see Gurukul. I was taking her around, showed her different places. And she said, you know, actually you are living in a 5-star hotel. You know, this is how 5-star hotels look like. People pay thousands and thousands of dollars to go and live in this kind of place, which is peaceful, natural. I said, but the whole Mayapur is like that. You know, it's like trees everywhere, beautiful gardens. You know, we have every day we have festival looking at Radha Madhava during Darshanarati. And the whole Mayapur is like that. Yes, yes, yes. This whole place is so spiritually surcharged that there is no, you know, and these are the words of a Kurmi lady. And then I was speaking about cows, and then she said, unfortunately till this day I was actually eating cows. But today I promise that from now on I will never eat cow, because cow is mother. That's what she said. And then It was just, whoever comes to Mayapur is so spiritually surcharged. There was one, I don't know, you may have noticed, there was one Babaji used to come to Mayapur, you know, white beard, jata, would always wear the saffron clothes. And he was a resident of Badrinath. You know, he would always stay in Badrinath. And very often, every second month, third month, you would see him in Mayapur. And every time he came to Mayapur, you know, every time I saw him in the temple, he would say, this place is non-different from Goloka Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is non-different from Sri Krishna himself. And he's a, how to say, I think he was a Ramanandi maybe? He's not a Gaudiya Vaishnava. But he was the one who was saying, he says, in Ganga Devi here, when you take bath, that you can feel, you know, this place has Krishna is, you know, is here. You can feel that Krishna takes bath every day in Ganga. You can feel that Krishna is just around here. You can see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime happening every day is going on. He says, I travel all over India. Every time he would come here, he would tell me that, oh, at this time I'm coming back from Jagannath Puri. Now I'm coming back from Dwarika. Now I'm coming back from South. Now I'm coming from, you know, Vrindavan here and there. He says, but this place is non-different from Goloka Vrindavan. You know, here is all the holy places that resides here in Sri Dham Mayapur. He says, you may not understand it. He told me, you may not understand it, but this is the fact. And I said, how do you know? You read it in some Shastra? He says, no, I didn't read it in any Shastra, but I think he did mention some Shastra. Anyway, he read it in some place in some scripture. He did read it, but he says, he can feel it. He can feel it. And then he would do that every day. Whenever he was here, he would just come and spend time, stand in front of Radha Madhava, you know, chant whatever he was chanting. And he would say that this place is non-different from Goloka Vrindavan. So this is what, you know, it is to be in Sri Dham Mayapur. I actually went quite off track from the topic of Ganga Devi. One more point I had in mind when I first thought of what I'm going to speak about Ganga Devi was, why is Ganga Devi so has so much potency? In one of the lectures I was hearing, it was actually from it. She originates from the lotus feet of Lord Vamandev. She comes. That's why she is called Vishnupadi, one who comes down from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. If you see in Sri Vaishnavism, they say Paramapada. Paramapada means the supreme abode. So the Vaikuntha is called Paramapada. It's the lotus feet, the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu, the lotus feet up there. And you know, it's been flowing from Dhruvaloka to the moon to the Brahmaloka, comes down, and it's been held up by Lord Shiva on his head. And Lord Shiva, I think somewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada mentions that Lord Shiva is the, how to say, is the Lord of the universe, of the material creation. Because when Lord Vishnu looks, it glances at Prakriti, then that vision is called Shambhu, that's Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is the Lord of the material creation. So you have all the way from the supreme lotus feet of Lord Vishnu to the head of Lord Shiva, everything is included. And Lord, and the devotees of the Lord, they are considered more special, because one gets purified when they take bath in Ganga or in some rivers, but you have to go to that river. And when I was reading different parts, it mentions in can't remember. Anyway, I think it, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentioned somewhere, I think it was in Markandeya Purana, that even if you think about Ganga Devi, it purifies. So it's just like the devotees of the Lord, because she is a devotee of the Lord, that by thinking of her, we can get purified. Or by when the devotees, we see them, we get purified. So Ganga Devi has that potency because she originates from Lord Vishnu's lotus feet, that she has the potency to purify, even just by thinking of her, looking at her, of course taking bath in her. So it purifies like that, and especially in Mayapur, then it gives us Krishna Prema. So with this, I would like to conclude. Anybody has any questions, any comments? Yes, Prabhu?
Hare well. Thanks for the inspiring lecture. I wanted to ask you about the point of your education, or your general education, because you seem to be very happy, content, and confident. And we have a discussion, what is the need? Well, there is different opinion. What is the need of education for our youth? Somebody is pushing that they should be prepared to go out in the world, so they need to get maybe what we have, Oxford degrees, this and that. First question is, you're a brahmachari now, would you, and you know.
Go ahead.
Yeah. It would be nice if you remain like this for life. And just as a concept, would you be comfortable to say, it doesn't matter what I would be, whatever I got now is sufficient to go with my life. I'm not lacking anything, because everybody say, yeah, you get Gurukul, but when you're out there, you don't need to get married, you need to do this, you need to do that. What you're going to do, you don't know anything. That's the argument of many people. I mean, I'm not a proponent of this argument at all, but I just wanted to hear your opinion, right?
Just last month, we went to Chaupati Farm, Vada. They had a deity installation program. From there, we went to different devotees' house for preaching programs and did some fundraising for our school. And one of the hosts we had, the same thing came up with him. And I asked him, so what is your degree? He said, I'm a Bachelor of Arts. I have a BA degree. I said, and what's your profession? And he said, I'm constructing buildings. He has a business of real estate. So I said, what does the degree of BA and the real estate has to do with each other? He says, nothing. I said, but you are supposed to have a degree in engineering. He said, he told me I'm a practical engineer. And he is very rich person. He has a big house. He's a very, very rich man. He said, I'm a practical engineer. And then eventually we kept on discussing. And after the whole lecture was over, I had a personal discussion with him. The devotee who introduced us with him, he is his childhood friend. And at one point he said that actually I didn't even pass my BA examination. I just bought the degree to do the business. So if I have a degree, then people will acknowledge me, and then I can do my business. So what is required is the nature of a person. As the nature goes, the person can, by mentality, can be a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. So that doesn't really matter. Even if you have a businessman, even if he doesn't go through a business college, he's still going to do business. So he doesn't need a business degree. He has people who have done business degrees working for him. A very good example I have is an Indian gentleman called Dhirubhai Ambani, who started a whole Reliance company. Now we have phones and this and that. He, in his childhood, I think he was an orphan. He lost his parents in a very young youth, or he left, or something happened, he was alone. And he would sleep on the railway station. Early mornings he would go and sell newspapers. And during the day he would, work as a tea boy. He would be selling tea Huh? Yeah, petrol pumps, and you know, so he did a lot of, you know, things like that. And when he died, you know, so in his childhood, this was his childhood. And when he died, he was born in sandalwood. So this person had that much money when he died. He had no degrees. He didn't go to school. But he just was business-oriented person. So he did his business. He worked. Maharaj, Gurukul Maharaj, most of the time, you know, many of his classes, he mentions that most of the CEOs of these big companies, they have started as a, you know, sweeper or somebody like that, and they actually came up to that level of becoming CEOs. I think there is some, you know, some research done that only, I think, 1/4 of the companies, their CEOs are actually like, you know, they have gotten business, you know, like big degrees, and then they became. In fact, even my own cousin, he lost his father at the age of 14, and then he started to, you know, work in some call centers and this and that, and now he is the right-hand man of one of the CEOs of this event companies, and he has 13 MBA, you know, people who have MBA degrees working under him. And, you know, he has no MBA degree. Now he's going to do MBA degree so that his pay raise will become more. So from what I see, degrees have no meaning in life. What is required is how you deal with people. What is your mentality? What is your nature? So Gurukul education, because it is based on Shastra, it teaches you how to deal with the Lord's creation. How to deal with people, how to, you know, and according to your own nature, you progress. You know, so that's why when it comes to in your life, you will work according to your own nature. You know, and in case you need any degrees, you know, we have sufficient knowledge that you can go give an entrance exam in any of the universities, get a degree, or even nowadays you can just buy a degree. What's the big deal? You know, so it's not necessary. And myself, I feel, you know, 100% comfortable in going out in the world and, you know, starting something new. You know, we had, you know, devotees giving offers to different boys. I think one of the boys got an offer that, you know, he can be the chef in his restaurant, or, you know, be the how to say, the head pujaris in different temples, or, you know, in fact, we also got different devotees coming up to us and saying, oh, why don't, you know, few boys come and start up a new Gurukul in different area. So the, you know, the boys who have dedicated themselves to this system of Gurukul, and they are, you know, they are progressing, people are watching. You know, it just shows them that, you know, their qualification is shown. You don't need a degree for that. And then the people who are actually very, very successful, they are actually looking for qualified people. Not necessarily they are looking for people who have degrees. You know, so it's the qualification which is more important. Is that okay, Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu. Prabhu, maybe you can pass on the mic to him.
I have a degree from the University of Connecticut in music education. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I actually have a degree. But after I graduated from college, I worked for 4.5 years before I joined the devotees as a working musician in my town, Danbury, Connecticut. That's where I was born and raised. And when it comes to being a working musician, a person who's actually playing and making his money by playing music for other people, no one cares about a degree. The only thing is, can you play the instrument or can you not? That's the only thing that matters. And there was one particular gentleman who, in my town, was just an incredible trumpet player. I mean, incredible. And he made his living his entire life as a trumpet player in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And a good living, too.
Yeah.
He could play and he could sing, he could sing, he was very entertaining. Very wonderful to watch, you know. Yeah. And anyway, so, you know, an entertainer, a real entertainer, mm-hmm. didn't have a degree, never graduated from high school, actually. But the thing is, he lived a charmed life,
yeah.
You know, because he had that one skill. And that one skill saw him through his entire life. Anyway, it's just one example.
Yeah. Also in my personal school life, I put this question to many, many devotees and nobody has given me a satisfactory answer. Is from your school life, you know, you spend 10 years, 12 years, depending where you come from, in your high school. And what do you actually use in life from your school life is, I would say, your languages that you use and your and some part of your mathematics, like addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, that's it. But in your day-to-day life, what do you use? For me, I don't see anything. So why, you know, how to say, we already the people of youth, they are wasting their life doing so many crazy stuff. So why do waste it even more by studying something which is worthless? You know, you spend 7 hours, you know, 6-7 hours in school. And for me, it was when I see in my life, and in fact, when I went to meet my teachers after, you know, after studying a few years in Gurukul, I went back to, you know, see my teachers. They told me, Chaitanya, you have wasted 10 years of your life in school. You should have done this from the very beginning. I said, yes, but it was because of your, you know, you were forcing and my mother was forcing. That's why I did my high school. There was no other reason I did it. You know, and that's what my teachers told me, you know, you wasted your life. And that's what I feel. You know, in that case, if I would have joined Gurukul at the age of 5, I would be much happier. Yes, sir.
Everything works out to a service attitude. That is what people who hire are looking for. That is what everybody in the whole world is anxious to see in another individual. Mm-hmm. Does this person have a service attitude? Does he appreciate me?
Yeah.
Is he going to help me?
Yeah.
And once that attitude is established in a person and he presents himself as a servant, then he becomes extremely successful.
Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a very nice class.
Thank you, Prabhu. Okay, so we'll end here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki, Ganga Mata ki, Nitai Gaura Premanande.